It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 185 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I'm bringing a special interview with Bob Sally from Salvagers fame and Kelly Bender from Starburn, two independent comics. We catch up on these two creators and what they're doing, and then we get into something a little different for the podcast. We get into something resembling a panel discussion, which is reminiscent of what has been happening recently at San Diego Comic-Con. We talk about the creation of independent comics, how each of these creators got started, and where they're likely to go in the future. So we have a little bit of an extended interview this time, and I hope you'll enjoy it. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome back to the podcast, Bob Sally, the creator of Salvagers. How are you doing today, Bob?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on again, Wayne.
And for the first time, Kelly Bender. And why don't you tell us what stuff you've created, Kelly, because you've got a lot of credit to your name there.
Thanks for having me, Wayne. Yeah, so my name is Kelly Bender. I'm a comic book writer living in Singapore, but originally from Canada. I'm the co-creator and writer of Snarl, which is out by Alterna Comics. It's a crime comic book. I'm also the creator and writer of Starburn, which is a four-issue sci-fi miniseries out right now from Arcosia, among other things.
I have to say, before I get any further, I read, because I really like Salvagers, and when I read your book, Kelly, I kind of felt like these guys are in the same universe, that you guys could do a crossover at some point, and man, it would make perfect sense because you've got Salvagers on your side, and you've got Space Pirates on your side, Kelly. It seems to me like this would be a perfect crossover, in my mind anyway.
I think you're not the only one who's thought that.
Okay. Talk about that a lot.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm glad I'm not the only one that does that, because they're both good books. Bob, why don't you first thing update us on how Salvagers is doing?
Well, right now, Salvagers 1, 2, and 3 is available in print on salvagers.bigcartel.com. And it's also, all three issues are also available on Comixology. And currently, George Acevedo is working on producing issue 4. And we are about halfway through the pages that are going to be going to the colorist. And we're hoping that we can get these out before the end of the summer. And it's going great. It's looking great. George always sends me pages just to keep me under wraps, and so I'm not barking down his door and asking him. But it's looking great, and I'm very pleased with it. And I'm looking forward to closing out the story arc.
Okay. Now, as far as the future goes, after you complete this miniseries, you're going to trade, are you, at that point?
Yeah, so once issue 4 is completed, we successfully had a Kickstarter where we will be sending out issue 4 as well as trade paperbacks with all four issues into one graphic novel, one trade paperback. And then from there, we will also be doing Diamond distribution. It'll be my first time, so a little nervous. I'm not exactly positive how it all works, but I'm looking forward to learning how it works and going through all the heartache and headache of working with Diamond Distribution, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting it out there and getting it spread out.
Is that going
to
be through Thinkalike?
That will be through Thinkalike Productions, correct.
Okay, that'll be good. So after that's done, have you got a second series in mind?
George is going to step down as the line artist for Salvagers because he's going to start working on his own project. He is going to stay on as the art director for the series. He's been with me since concept, and when he said that he wasn't able to do the line art anymore because he really wanted to focus on his own project, I totally was in support of it, but I did tell him that I wanted him to stay with me. I wanted him to be a part of this. I wouldn't feel right doing anything with Salvagers without George being a part of it. I am happy to say that it was a long arduous process, but we did find another artist who I am very excited about. His name is Chris Jevois out of Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. And he's already finished two pages on the beginning of volume two, just as kind of a tryout. Mm-hmm. And he blew me away. And I think it's going to be awesome because his artwork is, it's its own style, but I even showed it to George, and I think it's going to be a good transition, especially since it's going to be a whole new story arc. It's not going to be a part of the trade paperback that George is finishing. And it was really important for me to finish that trade paperback with George because we started it together. Not only did we start it together, but I wanted to finish it with him. But I thought it was also important for the reader to keep that visual. I've read graphic novels, even like DC Comics have done graphic novels where they'll mix in different artists. And it's, I feel like it's an interruption for the reader. And so I didn't want to do that. And Chris's art is very similar to George's, but again, it's its own style. Mm-hmm. But I'm very excited to be working with him, and I'm glad that I have the future of the franchise, at least for one more volume set.
Okay. Now, why don't you, in case somebody doesn't happen to know what Salvagers is, give like a TV guide version of what the book's about?
Well, Salvagers, it's basically Firefly with an endless supply of work that they just have coming to them. There's a galaxy full of aliens and humans and pirates and space junk that basically needs to be cleaned up. And these hapless people are the ones that are destined to do it. The characters, they're not your heroes. They're not rebels fighting the Empire. They're not explorers. They are you and me with your average everyday job, but their average everyday job is to comb the galaxy for junk to clean up and hopefully collect some money for. And they have to deal with everybody else out there trying to collect a piece of the pie too. So I was at a Comic-Con, and you know, you have so many different elevator pitches and you try to start creating new ones. So one of them that I was toying around with was, if you can imagine Star Wars with an element of The Office in it, that's what this would be like. You definitely have your Dwight Schrute as well as your Han Solo. So if you can imagine being in space with people in your office that you just can't stand, then this is it.
It's a good book. I really enjoy it, and you know, highly recommend it to people. Anybody who likes science fiction, I think this is a good story, too. And based on what I've read of your book, Kelly, I think that your book is a good book, too. We were just saying that you guys would make a great crossover, the two of you guys, because your space is sort of a gray area instead of the all-white Star Trek, you know, where everything is great and glorious, to the all-dark science fiction stories that are really bad, you know, that everything is terrible and the whole universe just goes to hell in a handbasket. Your guys are much more realistic, what I consider, what would space be like if we were out there as we are today? And so, Kelly, I like your book, too. I think that's why I think you guys would make a great crossover, because your characters, and you have a bigger cast than Bob does, but do you want to talk a little bit about what your book is about?
Sure, yeah. Thanks, Wayne. I love Bob's book, and I think that's why we became instant friends. Was I actually just digged his book, and where Bob created a universe, like, Bob has the whole universe, and I just have this small little portion of these people that are just floating around in space. And I think Bob and I kind of come at the exact same way, where it's not galaxies going, it's just people going through about their daily lives, trying to survive, almost like the new frontier type of thing, and just trying to do what they can to survive, to make the next day and make some money and just go on adventures. And I think that's where a lot of the connections through our book happens. And yeah, I totally get why people want to do crossovers with us, and it's definitely something that Bob and I are definitely going to discuss in the future. As a hint, actually, his character actually appears in the fourth issue of Starburn.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And we've also talked to, and some other guys do as well. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where you've read the book, and I don't want to give away too much, Wayne, to the reader, to the listeners, but yeah, don't get attached to the crew. Like the one thing I say is I even tell my artists and my illustrators that the story is really about the ship, and that's what it's about, right? It's, if you want to put like the elevator pitch in my book, it's the early adventures of the Millennium Falcon before Han and Lando got a hold of it. The Starburn is just the biggest, baddest, best, fastest ship in the galaxy, and everybody wants it.
It's funny you mention that, because I read the three issues that you made available to me. I was going to mention the fact that you do story pivots like nobody else I've seen. Now, at the end of the second book, there's a huge story pivot, and then it continues on to the third book. And I haven't seen the fourth one yet, so I'm dying to see the fourth one. So I want to know where we're going from here, because I love it when a book surprises me and intrigues me enough to where I want to read the next issue right away. And I'm disappointed when I get to the end of the book, because I've got to wait for the next issue to show up. So you did a good job with that, Kelly. I thought that Starburn is really a very good book in that we get drawn into the characters, and we're just fascinated to see what you're going to do next.
Oh, thanks, Wayne. I love books like that. I love reading comic books where it's got the hook ending, you know, like it wants to bring you back to the next thing. And I also, with the four-issue miniseries, I wanted to make sure that there was closure, enough closure for each character, but I had to introduce each character. Like I said, it all comes down to the ship. And yeah, like after that second issue, the illustrator's like, I can't believe you killed that guy. I'm like, dude, it's about the ship. Like, which is really weird because the ship's there the whole time. Mm-hmm. And the characters, and we're trying to get you to know the characters and figure out who these guys are and what they're about and what their intentions. And that was the really big challenge I had, was just trying to get you to like these characters mm-hmm. enough so that when things happened to them, it actually meant something. Mm-hmm. And I really hope I did that. And it was a real challenge to only do it in the four issues. And the fourth issue comes out, we're hoping, for end of August.
Okay. Now, how do people get a hold of your book?
Yeah, it's on Comixology right now. You can just search me, Kelly Bender, or my publisher, Mark Koja, or just Starburn itself. And then once it's completely done, all four issues. Oh, it's also on Dollar Downloads as well. We just upped that onto that site as well, mm-hmm. just to try out that site and give another chance for readers to find it. And then, once all four issues are done, it'll be printed in a trade paperback, which I'll be selling at some Comic Cons, and as will the publisher in the UK.
Okay. Now, of course, I asked Bob the same thing. I said, do you have a second story arc prepared for these characters?
Starburn was always something where, do I have ideas and stories? I 100% do. But for me, Starburn was tell a story and it's complete. Like, so when the story's fourth issue's done, I'm content if it just sits there. Okay. I'm also content if I bring it forward and I do another arc or another story. And because it's about the ship, I mean, I could do a story with a whole new crew in the future 20 years from now, or mm-hmm. I could do the first adventures of when the ship was actually built, right? Mm-hmm. So I can do all that, right? And I think what I liked about it is that my whole entire goal for the series was, because all of us came together. So like Brian Belando, the amazing artist. We got Christian Doklamansky, the talented inker. We got Laura Lee on colors. Then Nick J. Shaw was the original letterer. And then he had to step down because he just got too busy, which is great. That's exactly what I wanted, right? And then Mika Myers was able to step in and he's going to do the letters for issue 3 and 4. And the whole point was just do something that's quality, that will get us noticed. And then my goal, honestly, if at the end of the day, Brian Belando can't do the second series, if we're going to do a second series, then I'm proud of that. You know, I'm happy that he's so busy and he got some work done. And he's getting, you know, other paid gigs, and that's great. Like, that's what I'm hoping for. And for me, like, I do have other stories as well, but I do also have other Starburn stories. Mm-hmm. And so if the publisher says, hey, let's do a second volume, yeah, I'd be up for that. I definitely would probably find a new illustrator just because Brian is so busy. Mm-hmm. And like Bob was saying, just to give a new spin on the characters, right? And I liked Queen and Country was brilliant that did that for Oni, where every new arc was a new illustrator. Mm. So you got a new feel, a new vibe of it. So yeah, so I think that's what we'll probably end up doing.
Mm. Okay. Because I just reviewed a book from Kurt Prez, I think his name is. It's P-I-R-E-S, but I think it's pronounced Prez, but I could be totally wrong and butchering that like crazy. But he's doing a book called The Tomorrows, which is a four-issue miniseries, and every issue is drawn by a different person. And so I'm kind of curious.
Warren Ellis did that with his Global Frequency, which is absolutely brilliant because he only had the two reoccurring characters, so you didn't get lost because every new issue was new characters, right? You weren't too thrown off by that. Also, Zero's happening for Image right now. I can't remember the writer of that, but that same thing. Every issue is a new artist. It's great that way, but I'll be honest with you. Sometimes it really throws you for a loop because some art styles are not as appealing, right? And we were talking about Queen of Country where coming from that first arc with Steve Rolston's art, and then all of a sudden coming to the second arc, and all of a sudden there's like she was totally drawn different. Like all of a sudden, like Agent Chase came from like an average looking girl, then all of a sudden this guy's drawing her like a supermodel with massive jugs, and it was just like, it's like, no, like that's not Tara Chase, you know? And like the blogs really hit that hard where a lot of readers just fell right off of that, right? They didn't like that. But yes, it's about finding the right tone for your book and the right art style as well. So,
Okay. Well, that leads us right into the topic that we wanted to talk about some, and that is independent comics, which I think you guys are well suited to discuss. And we're going to kind of do this like as if we were talking about doing like a convention panel about independent comics. So, Bob, why don't you start us off and talk about why do independent comics?
Well, I think the first thing you would do is if you have a story and you decide that the way you want to tell your story, whether it be in prose or comics or you want to write a screenplay, if you decide that you want to write it in the comic form, I mean, obviously you need to learn how to write a comic script. I went to Dark Horse's submission guideline because I had no idea how to write a comic script. So I went there and they kind of gave their guidelines on how to do it. And then I just bought every single book that I could. And I even bought comic books where you could go on Amazon, you could buy the comic book. And you can buy it in script form where the left page has the script and the right page shows you the page that the script is describing. So I think the first element is you just need to learn how to write a script. Well, after you come up with the concept that you want to write. Once you do that, then the second part is you need to find an artist. Finding an artist, I know that a lot of people have come to me and they asked me, like, can you hook me up with some artists? I have this great concept. And the first thing I always ask them is, I'm sure like Kelly does as well. I know a lot of artists. I know a lot of artists that can do pinup work. I know a lot of artists that can do sequential art. So obviously the first question I ask them is, well, what's your budget? And they said, well, I don't really have a budget, but I have a really great concept. And if I could just get an artist to read my script, I know that I can have them do the art and then I'll pay them once we sell it to one of the publishers. So I want to be honest with people, and I always tell them, like, it doesn't work that way, you know? And I think that comes as a shock to people when they realize, like, okay, it costs a lot of money to take a comic from concept to print. And I did. When I first started off, George Acevedo could tell you, I was asking him, like, hey, do you want to go 50-50 on this? And he was like, nah, you keep it all, and I'll just take the money. So that's the one thing I tell people is you got to be willing to pay to have an artist do this work, because they're not going to do it for free. They're not going to do it for – I mean, obviously, like, if Jonathan Hickman or somebody big name came out and they're like, hey, you know, like, I got this script that, you know, IDW or Image wants to pick up. Why don't you do the work for free and we'll pay you on the back end? Like, any artist would jump on that. But somebody who's just starting out, like, you know, an artist needs to be paid now, because you could be gone the next day. Like, you could give up on it. You could be like, yeah, you know what? I'm on to something else now. So that's the reality of it, is you do need to pay your artists, and they're not going to do it for free. They're going to want to be paid, and you're going to have to pay an artist to do the sequential art. You're going to have to pay a colorist to color it. And I did this mistake the first time I did Salvagers issue one is George was like, you should get a letterer. And I was like, nah, you could do it. And George was like, you know, I've never done lettering before. And when I found a letterer to redo it, I was blown away. And I think a lot of people, they say, like, well, I'll save the money on the lettering. Don't save the money on the lettering. The lettering is just as important as everything else. The comic is like a four punch pack. It's the writing, the sequential art, the coloring, and yes, the lettering as well is very important.
How about you, Kelly? What are you thinking about that?
I got to be honest. I'm contradicting everything you're just saying, Bob. I honestly haven't paid any of my guys. The only way we've earned money is on back end pay. But what I've done is, I think I'm like one of the exceptions to the rule, because when I first came in, yeah, I was like, oh, I have this awesome idea, this concept. But the thing is, I didn't know how to write comic books at the time, right? And so I did what you did. I researched the hell out of it. And I think that's the biggest thing that I find in this industry, is that people look at comic books as it's just, oh, well, probably all you do is just all day is read comic books, play video games, and that's what you do, right? And it's funny because, like, I'll do meetings here, which aren't comic book related, but, like, just writing related. And comic books is one of those industries where I could walk into a meeting wearing shorts and a T-shirt, and not only is it accepted, it's also kind of expected once they find out you're a comic book writer, right? And I think that's just the mystique that's around comic books, where it's not really a job and it's not really work. And I'm telling you, as a full-time comic book writer, it is a lot of work. It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of just managing your team and working with your team. And, you know, I'm art directing, I'm directing, I'm editing, I'm, you know, script copy, I'm doing all that stuff, right? So the one thing I will say is, when you first start out, if you have your what you call your Watchmen, you know, like, this is my grand opus, you know what I mean? Like, if this is your greatest thing you're ever going to write in your entire life, I would hold it back. I would honestly, like, hold it back, because you're not going to get picked up right away by Image. That's just 100% fact. Like, Image puts out all these new books every year, but they're all by established guys. Like, Image won't touch you until you can actually show that you can do the work. And so you've got to start out, like, you know, if you want to break into comic book industry, then do anthology stories. Do one-shots. Then work your way up to, you know, a 3 or 4 issue miniseries, right? And then once you have that backlog catalog of actual completed work, then find an artist, because at that point, you're established yourself, right? And that's where you grow the levels, right? Like, I've always looked at comic books like professional baseball, where nobody just goes and plays for the Yankees, right? Like, you have to go to A, AA, AAA, and then eventually you get a call up to the pros. And that's the biggest thing. But at the very beginning, you have to determine yourself and be honest with yourself. What's your game plan? What are you trying to achieve? Is it just this one story? Is that all you want to do is get this one story out? Then yeah, like, odds are you're going to have to probably pay for a guy to do it or things like that. But I mean, if you're looking for a career, then you need to find people who are on the same level as you are and are trying to achieve the exact same goals. So for the Starburn guys, like, all of us before it all happened, none of us had been really published, right? Like, I had, you know, a one-shot here, one-shot there, but I mean, it didn't really get picked up, right? So I talked to Brian Bolando and said, hey, dude, like, I love your stuff. Here's what I'm thinking. Yes, we're not going to make a lot of money on this, right? But we're going to get published, and I'm going to work my butt off to make sure this gets published, right? And that's my thing is, like, I didn't want to self-publish any of these books, because I think self-publishing is one thing. It's a great step, and it's a great thing to do. But at the end of the day, I think self-publishing, we don't know how long that book took you, right? Like, if you're self-publishing, that first issue could have taken 5 years to make, right? Like, Douglas Adams said it best, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy author. He said, you know what, that first book took me my entire lifetime to write. That second novel took me a year. And then that's really what it is, right? Because you want the issues to be just as strong, but the second issue, like that first issue, you're just working and working and, like, you know, like, and then once that comes out, and especially once you have a publisher, that publisher is saying, okay, dude, 6 to 8 months, that second book's got to be done. Mm-hmm. Or if you're at a higher level, like Makoja, for example, they're like, okay, first issue's done, great. We're not going to release the first issue until that second issue's completely done. And then you better be working on the third issue, right? Because we want to come out, you know, like every other month type thing. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge thing.
How did you decide to go to Makoja, Kelly?
We actually got picked up by another publisher, actually. So it was one of those things where I pitched actually my Western comic book to a publisher. And he said, like, you know, like, we like the story and all this, but we're not looking for a Western. We're actually looking for a sci-fi book. And the guy's like, and I just had to be talking to the guy on the phone. It was one of those things. And then the guy's like, well, do you have a sci-fi book? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And I didn't at the time, right? But you just, yes, I do. I'm like, can you give me the weekend, you know, pound out? And this is like a Thursday or Friday. I'm like, can you give me the weekend, let me pound out? He's like, okay, yeah, give me the first script by the end of the weekend. And I'm like, oh my God, a first script at the end of the weekend? I'm like, okay, yeah, I can do that. Get off the phone, turn to my wife, and I'm like, baby, I'm writing all weekend. And she's like, okay, good, I'll order pizza. And that's what I did. I literally sat down and wrote Starburn issue 1 in a weekend.
Wow.
And sent it off. Guy loved it. It was already guaranteed picked up at that point because the publisher's like, yeah, just find your art team. And I'm like, okay, perfect. So then I went back to Brian Bolando and Christian, who I actually did a pitch with. I actually went to New York Comic Con and did a pitch with them for another sci-fi series, and which didn't get picked up. And then I'm like, hey, guys, we got guaranteed published work for a North American publisher. Here's what they're promising. You know, they're promising, you know, Comixology, Diamond, da-da-da-da-da. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And so they all came aboard. I found the colorist Laura Lee, which is just it's very serendipitous how this all happened. And I think how I found Laura Lee is the best way that you know it's very serendipitous, is that I found Laura Lee because my mom was golfing on a golf course, and she was paired up with this other group of old ladies, not old ladies, you know, ladies similar to the same age. And as old birds do, they just started talking. And then my mom's like, oh, my son writes comic books. And then the one lady's like, oh, my daughter goes to art college and she does her own comic books. And then they exchange, you know, information. And next thing you know, my mom's Skyping me and saying, you got to call this person. And I'm like, I did, and Laura Lee's been brilliant on the colors, and she's really making a difference on the book. And yeah, like, living in Singapore, like, this all started when I was in Canada, but now I'm in Singapore. So, I mean, I always said, like, the two things that allowed me to have a career have been spell checker and the internet. Because without the internet, like, Brian's from the Philippines, I'm from Singapore now, Laura's from Canada, Nick is from Australia, but now we got Mika, who's from America, and then we got Christian on Inks, who's from, I think he's from Chile, South America. So it's definitely United Nations.
No, Bob, how was your experience? Because yours was a little different than that.
Well, I mean, my experience was, I think what I did was exactly what Kelly was alluding to, is I had the one idea to write Salvagers. So, and we actually, I found George similarly, like how Kelly found his artist. I was in Park City, Utah. I was working with a guy doing concept art, and he just had twins. Mm. He was like, I can't do it anymore. So, you know, I'm in Park City, and somebody, a friend of mine was asking me, he's like, how's that comic book thing you want? And I was like, yeah, it's not doing so well. I just lost my artist. And back then, I mean, I don't even think Facebook was out. I think it was still like MySpace at the time. Mm. And I definitely did not have the network that I have now. So to find a comic book artist, I didn't even know where the first place to begin. Mm. So I know what I'd said. I was like, yeah, I just lost my artist. I haven't really been working on it. And she was like, well, you know what? She's like, I was just at my high school reunion, and I ran to this guy that I went to high school with named George, and he does comic book art. And now later to find out that he actually just dabbled in it, like he was just doodling. But then, you know, to look at the comics that he's putting out now, like, I'm glad that I was able to meet him and to say, like, all right, you know, to stop doodling and actually put the talent to work, you know, and now he's going to start doing his own series. But I think I have to agree with Kelly, you know, and I never really thought about it that way, because I do have scripts that I'm working on now that aren't Salvagers, that are other stories, that it's going to be way more easy for me to produce. It's going to be easier for me to find an artist. It's going to be easier for me to find a publisher. But yeah, for me, it was way different. I knew nobody that was in the industry, and I had to pedal my way through. And then when I got picked up by my first publisher, I was naive. I had no idea what I was doing. And I think that I was just totally starstruck on the fact that, like, somebody wants me. You know, I always refer to it as the girl stepping off the bus in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You're an open wound. Like, everybody's just looking to, like, pick you apart.
Oh.
And, yeah, so the first publisher that we got with, it wasn't the greatest experience at all. And I think that turned me off from being published. And I thought, like, you know, I just want to learn how to do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found the guys at Think Alike Production, and they were great. They had the same work ethic that I respect in the industry. And I think that, again, that's where Kelly and I became friends, is because I can see how hard he works. And I mean, how jealous I am of him. He doesn't work. He's a writer, a full-time writer. Mm. I tell him all the time, like, that's what I want. Pick your brain. So I'm sitting here in this podcast writing notes. I'm like, all right, Kelly Bender's talking.
The biggest thing is it having a wife who allows you to do that.
And again, I mean, you have to have, I agree with that totally. My wife is very supportive, but yeah, I mean, it's an upward battle. But I think, like, where I've gotten myself from not knowing, there's actually a Facebook page called Star Salvagers, and it'll be funny to see how many friend requests it gets once this is out there. But it's called Star Salvagers, and that's what we first called ourselves when I first built the page, was Star Salvagers. And then I totally abandoned it. It was like, you know, a personal page. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, it still comes up, and there's like nobody likes it. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. I read every single book. But I think, like, now where I've been, and I definitely have a better grasp on what I'm doing and how to get things done. And like Kelly said, I mean, like, when you're an indie creator and writer, like, you're a writer, you're a producer, you're a editor, you know, you are an art director in such a respect. No matter who sends you your art, you're the writer. So there's things where you'll be like, nah, I want you to change this, I want you to do that. But it is a lot of fun, and I do have the 9-to-5 job, so I would love to be able to focus totally on it, but it's a struggle, but it's so rewarding. That's the one thing that I say to everybody, that when you print your first comic book and it arrives and you're holding it in your hand, it's such an amazing feeling. And just like the second one, it's like having a kid. Mm-hmm. When you have your first kid, it's like, that's a kid. But then, like, the second comic book is when you realize, like, I'm not just a fluke. Like, I'm not a one-hit wonder. Like, I did it again,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then the third one, you're like, I know what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's surreal when it comes to that, when you really think of where you start, or at least where I started and where I am now. But again, I mean, like, everything that Kelly just said there, I'm sitting there taking notes, like, all right, my second, my third one, I'm going to get picked up by IDW. I can't wait.
So, Kelly, what was your experience comparatively?
Yeah, well, I was just going to add to what Bob's saying is that working with comic books, there's a huge learning curve, right? Because there is no, hey, this is how you do it. Right? And so we all come into it in different ways, right? Like, I've never done a Kickstarter. Bob's done numerous successful Kickstarters, right? Like, I'm working with guys who, I think they work with me because they trust me, and they also trust the fact that I'm not going to let them down. And then that's the biggest thing, where some of the illustrators that I'm working with, like Ryan Downing, my illustrator for Death Rattler, which is just got picked up actually by Marcosia, which is going to be coming out pretty soon. I can finally announce that. Like, that illustrator is absolutely amazing. Like his stuff just blows my mind. And yet he's never had published work because he's actually worked with guys and they've never done the work. Like, the writer's never followed through. And I'm like, dude, you've had an illustrator. Like, that's the hardest part for me, is finding an illustrator, you know? But that being said, like, because people see that you've done the work, they see that you're completing stuff, publishers are then able to take a chance on you, right? They're like, okay, well, I know this guy knows what he's doing, right? But then on the other hand, you also have illustrators who are like, yeah, like, this guy's getting published work. I want to get published work because, like, I'm sorry, like this is just industry talk right here. Straight up, I'm going to be 100% honest to the illustrators and the colorists and the inkers and the letterers out there, is that you need published work. Marvel Comics is not going to call you guys. You know, like, you can sit there and do your pinups all day long and they look absolutely amazing, and I'm sure they're selling at cons, and I'm sure you're getting commissions. But at the end of the day, if you want to be a comic book illustrator, like I always look at, like every comic book has one cover and 22 sequential pages inside. What do you think artists should be practicing if they want to be comic artists? You know what I mean? Like, but I also understand that sequential art doesn't sell, right? So what I do is, like, when I go to a con, you can have your portfolio as big as you want, full of as many pages as you want, and your business card as flashy as you want. But the best business card you're ever going to have, and it's even better than a degree from the Kirby School of Art, it's better than a degree from, you know, like, whatever art college you went to, is that completed comic book. If you can walk up to Marvel Studios, show them your portfolio, and give them a full completed comic book that you've done, that right there is more important than an entire portfolio. Because at the end of the day, they want to see who can do the work. Mm-hmm. Big publishers want to know two things. And when I say big publishers, these are the diamond level publishers, right? Mm-hmm. They want to know two things. One, can you make comic books? Can you do the work? Can you do quality work on a consistent basis? That's the number one thing that they want to know. Mm-hmm. Number two, they want to know, can you sell comic books? And that's where, like, do you have a following? Do you have a fan base? Is your product marketable? And those are the two biggest things that publishers want to know right off the bat. That's it. That's as simple as you can make it if you want to get to that level. But in the meantime, you have to do all that other work to get there, right? Like, when I was talking about the baseball, like the AAA, AAA, A is your anthology stories. A is your self-publishing. A is your web comics. B is when you start working with an editor. You start working with a publisher and you start meeting deadlines and all this other stuff, right? And then AAA is when you start higher up in the levels. You're working with the Marcoges, the Alternas, and guys like that, or 215 Inc. All guys like that who are well-known. Some of them are on Diamond, some of them are not, but they've got great reputation. They're putting out quality books by numerous artists and a bunch of guys. And that's where you want to get to. And once you get to that level, then your next step is, if you want to go up to the Image and the Boom and the Oni and Dark Horse and blah, 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 right? And that's where you want to get to. But you have to do the work, right? Like what Bob was saying with that bus in Hollywood, there's a lot of publishers who are small indie publishers who got into indie publishing because nobody picked up their book. Mm-hmm. That's 100% pretty much factual right there, right? But the problem is that the reason their books weren't picked up is because they didn't put in the time, they didn't take it seriously. Like Bob was saying, they skipped out on the lettering. I've actually been at a booth at New York Comic Con where a guy's pitching his comic book to a publisher, and the publisher's looking at it, da-da-da-da-da, says, you know, like, hey, looks good, da-da, we'll think about it. Guy walks away, guy turns to me and says, and shows me the book, and says, why would they cheap out on the lettering? And the guy, his entire quote was, why would you serve me steak on a paper plate? Mm. Like the art is amazing, the story's amazing, the colors are amazing, the inks are amazing, and then you cheap out on lettering? You have to look at a comic book like it's a team, right? And in your entire goal of your team, whether it's any professional sport, is to win the championship. Our championship just happens to be being published. Now, in order to get published, in order to win a championship, the entire team has to work together, you know, whether it's your ninth batter in the order, whether it's your guy on the bench who is, you know, not batting very good, or, you know, you have to have everybody working the same page, in the same philosophy, the same mindset, and it has to be going. And if anybody's slowing that process down, all you're doing is you're killing everybody else on the team's dream. And so you really have to work together, and it really has to be a team concept. And the thing when I work with my guys is I tell them two things. One, I'm going to be 100% honest with you from the very beginning. I'm going to tell you exactly, you know, what the expectations are, what we're trying to achieve on this level. And number two is I'm going to do my best to make sure that you get published and you get noticed. Because like when you're first starting out, I'll be honest with you, the money isn't important. The most important thing is that published work, getting that comic book that you can give to somebody and say, this is what I've done, so that your name's on Comixology, your name's in Diamond, you know, so that you can actually show that you've done the work. That's more important than an illustrator saying, yeah, I want $25 a page. Mm. You can get paid $25 a page, but that book might never get published. Mm-hmm. Which happens a lot, because some guys just want to publish it for themselves.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to a guy who does people might recognize the name in the book. And I interviewed him, and I said to him, I said, how did you get the artist? And he said he had handed out so many scripts, he was giving up hope on ever getting it done. And he finally gave it to this one guy, and the one guy was all real excited about it. Oh boy! And the writer's going, yeah, right. And he was so shocked the next week when the guy contacted him and actually wanted to go ahead and do it. So there's all different levels dealing with people, and you've got to really believe in your product and in yourself to make these things happen, it seems like to me.
Well, you really do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was just saying, you really do. And like I've always said, there's a big difference between somebody who wants to work in comic books mm-hmm. and somebody who wants to work in comic books. But I'll give you a quick example, and then I'll let Bob go, is that Marvel Comics last year hired a lot of artists. Mm-hmm. They hired, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know, and this is me talking to CB, Sobolewski, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, the Marvel, he's the guy that actually, like, he's the talent guy for Marvel. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking to him, and he was in Asia this past year, and what he said was, we hired a lot of artists last year, and more artists than our books require. And the reason being is because they see these guys' portfolios, they get them, they get the work, and then next you know, you have to put out, for Marvel, you have to put out 22 pages in 18 days. Mm. Not 18 working days, 18 days. Mm. This is also, by the way, 22 pages of mm-hmm. high-quality work, mm-hmm. which also gets looked at by an art director with corrections. So mm-hmm. they actually have to correct things, right? Because these guys aren't coming in and knowing exactly how to do it, right? That's why guys like Mark Bagley and J.R. Jr. or whatever, John Romano Jr., mm-hmm. this is why these guys have careers still, right? Because they can do the sequential art, they know exactly how it's done, and they can pound out these pages, right? Even though some of their stuff looks timestamp. Like Mark Bagley still looks like he's drawing from the 80s, right? But he's also doing quality work, right? And that's what these guys need to know, is that they have to do the work, get it done, but it's a full-time job. But mm-hmm. go ahead, Buff.
No, I'm just listening. This is why I brought Kelly onto the show. I'm getting schooled here. I love listening to this. I'm taking notes, man. I'm having a great time here.
Well, great. Right now, I do have a question for both of you. I will start off with you, Bob. Was there an experience you had that let you know you wanted to create comics? Did you read something that elicited that response in you? Did somebody tell you you should do it? You know, did you read a book and you said, well, I could do better than that? I mean, what was it that made you decide you wanted to create comics?
When I first started creating comics, it was due to writer's block. I wanted to be like the great American novelist, and I hit some writer's block, and I was like, you know what? I always liked comic books and I always liked sci-fi, and I just started racking my brain with a good concept. And from watching Star Wars and seeing all this stuff blow up, I just figured, I was like, you know what? There needs to be a crew out there that's going to clean it up. And if there's a crew that's going to clean it up, they're probably going to have issues with each other, mm-hmm. not to mention their lives. At the time, like I was working this job where everybody was just complaining. And I thought, I was like, that's it. Like, that would be the crew. Like, they would be together, but none of them would want to be doing what they're doing. Like, you can make the series, like, where people would be like, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to be a guy that cleans up space. But they don't want to do that. They'd rather be doing something else. Mm-hmm. And they all probably have some kind of dark background that led them to being on a ship that goes out and cleans up space. So as I started writing it, I started actually really loving the characters and loving the concept. And then I started working on it, and I didn't work on anything else. That was it. It was all working on this concept. And even when I did issue one and I put that out, and then when I did issue two, I think it was when I put out issue three and I realized, like, I could see that I never learned how to write a comic. I learned on the way. And I think when I did issue 3, that's when I kind of felt like, you know, like, this is good. And I was very proud of it. And then it made me proud of the whole series, because I could look back at issue 1 and I could see the mistakes that I made, and I could see that I corrected them. Mm-hmm. And in issue 2. And then I could see the mistakes that I made in issue 2, and I see that I corrected them in issue 3. So I felt that it was something like, I think that anybody, and Kelly, you, hopefully, you know, you can tell me what you think about this, but I think anything that you do in life, if you can see that you're getting better at it and you're enjoying it, then I feel like that's at some point you have to think to yourself, like, that's what I'm supposed to do. Because I think a lot of people in their jobs, they become complacent and they think like, well, you know what? You know, I don't need to get any better at it. I'm collecting a paycheck. I don't need to get any better at it. There's nothing more that I need to do to do what I'm doing. So I think when I saw the progression from 1 to 3, that's when I realized, like, I'm taking the time to learn what I'm doing and to learn how to be better at it. And that's when I think I realized, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, how about you?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. Like, you just get better at it, and you try it, and you do it. And the thing is, you got to be happy you're doing it, right? If you're forcing yourself, and that's why, like, even with ideas and concepts I have, I try and figure out the entire story before I even think about talking to an artist about it, right? Because you want to make sure that that's legit, that it's a full story, that it has a purpose, that it has a meaning for it. But for me, it was, I would always wanted to write comic books. I've been a comic book fan my entire life. You know, I started out, you know, doing the superhero stuff, and then I found the magic of Vertigo Comics, and then eventually a friend introduced me to Image again and what they were doing, and then I found Boom. I love what Boom was doing when they first started, what they're still doing, and Oni and all these. You know, I just found these amazing creator-owned stories, which as a reader and as a writer, I need closure, and that's the one thing I would never going to get from a superhero was closure, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing. Comic books are right now, they're in an influx of trying to figure out, you know, like, how are we getting these new readers in, right? And I think the biggest thing is that you're getting a lot of these people who grew up reading novels and stuff like that, right? And they love novels and they're passionate about novels. And then, you know, now they're on TV and they're like, oh, what else is on TV? Oh, Daredevil's on TV, or all these other, you know, superhero books, right? And they're like, oh, I wouldn't mind trying out. But then they're going to read a comic book and there's no closure, right? It just doesn't end. And where the series kind of does, right? And that's the biggest downfall right now for comic books. But what's happening is that they're also going towards the indie more, because they are getting the closure, they are getting the complete story, right? And that's what I think a lot of people want. They want stories to happen for reasons, right? Like, one of my favorite series is 100 Bullets, and I'll always remember when Shepard died, because Shepard was one of those main characters you knew from the very beginning, but he died and you're like, my God, they killed Shepard, right? But like, you're just so shocked, right? And you know it's not for sales. You know it's not for marketing and this and that. It was 100% done for the story, because the story had to progress farther than he could take that story. And his chapter was done, and it's absolutely brilliant. And that's what you want as a reader. Like, as a reader and as a fan, you want something to happen for a reason, not for marketing, not for sales, and not, hey, we're going to bring Spider-Man back again, or hey, Superman's dead, now he's come back, right? We don't want that. Some people do, but a lot of people, like, who grew up reading novels, they don't want that. They want an actual story. And so, yeah, so I grew up, and then I woke up from a dream, actually, and I thought, wow, that's a great idea. And I just started writing it down, and I just started focusing on it, working on it, and then I tried to figure out, okay, like, at first I was like, hey, let's do it as a movie, and tried to do some research how to do it as a movie, and obviously realized pretty quickly that it's so much harder to make a movie than it is a comic book. And also for me, what it was is the formula. Like, writing a comic book is a formula. There's a reason it's set up the way it's set up, right? And Bob was talking way earlier about script writing, about how to learn it. And I can tell you that about 20 to 30% of the Top Cow Talent Hunt scripts that just came in were rejected based on not knowing how to write a comic book script. Just formula alone. Like, 20% to 30% were rejected just based off of not knowing the formula. It could have been a way better script. I actually was a runner-up for that, so I finished top 4 or top 5. I'm not sure what number I was. But I could have not made that if those people just knew how to write a script properly, right? But that comes from research and knowing how to do it, right? And that's what they want to know. Is like when the script comes in, they want to be able to nice and easy, you know, they want it separated. They want to know that, you know, that anybody could look at it, especially in Bob's and I case in indie comics, where a lot of our illustrators, they're doing it at night, right? They're doing it at night or on their free time. And you want to make it as quick and easy as possible. So these guys can just go, okay, look, page one, how many panels? Okay, 5 panels. Okay, well, it says right here, 3rd panel is the largest panel. Okay, then I can already start setting it up. The page is that simple, that quick, right? And then it's just a matter of, okay, what do I got to draw on each one, right? And then the inker, like it's in the letterer, it's so much easier that way. And that's the thing is, but it's knowing and doing your research. Like, if you want to work in comic books, then you better know comic books, right? Like, so like being a professional baseball player, saying, oh, I want to be a professional baseball player because I like having money, you know? Like, it's you have to actually know what you're doing, right? And take it seriously and do the actual work. If you want to be a writer, then write. If you want to be an artist, then draw. But it doesn't happen like that. You have to put in the time. You have to put in the effort. And at this point in my career, I can honestly say I've done more free work. When I say free work, I mean not paid work. Just for getting published and promoted, then I have done paid work. And I have paid gigs. But I got those paid gigs after I did the already published work because they need to see that I've done the work, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't stress that enough. I really can't. Is that like all these guys are like, oh, artists are like, oh, pay me $25 a page. Well, like, what have you done? Like, what have you been published? Well, I haven't been published yet. I'm like, well, then I'm sorry. Why am I paying you $25 a page when I'm not getting paid and I've been published, right? Or even, you know, like, and even let's say you haven't both been published. It's like I've never really understood that concept. But I also know that a lot of writers do take advantage of a lot of illustrators. Mm-hmm. Just like Bob was saying earlier, where a lot of publishers take advantage of a lot of comic book writers, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's the unfortunate thing. And that's the really downside thing of it. And that's why what I do is I always co-create now. When I first started out, it was me. Here's a concept. Got to go find an illustrator. Got to find an inker. And now it's, no, like what I'm doing is I'm meeting people through social media. I'm meeting people through Twitter, Facebook, and DeviantArt, and you name it. And they're coming to me and saying, hey, dude, I'm seeing what you're doing. I'm loving it. You know what? I've never been published before. I'd like to work on something with you, right? And I'm like, okay, well, the first thing I ask them is like, dude, I go through their portfolio. I'm like, what are you passionate about, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing. If you want to work with an illustrator, make sure they're passionate. Like we talked about Starburn with Brian Belando. Like, that guy was born to draw sci-fi and superheroes. But then my other book, Snarl, which is drawn by Dathan Kelly, like, that guy was born to draw noir, gritty, urban crime comic books, right? And he's not a sci-fi illustrator, right? It's just not in him, right? It's not his passion. It's not his style, right? Then that's the thing is, you got to ask the guys, what are they passionate about? And then what you do is you just pound out conversations, right? Like, one of the best things I do with my guys, and it's one of my favorite parts about making comic books, is the collaboration process, is actually talking to the guys saying, hey, you know, like the illustrator, and saying, okay, we want to do this. What do you want to do? And like, he's like, oh, what about this? And I'm like, okay, that's great. What about this? And we just go back and back and forth. And then once we figure out our entire concept and outline, then it's like, okay, are we happy with this? And the guy's like, yeah, okay, well, you start designing the main characters. I'll start working on the scripting, right? And so then we go that way. And it's been a great brain process because, one, for me, if I'm ever stuck in a situation where I'm like, oh, like, I just don't get it, and then I just talk to them and they're like, oh, da-da-da. I mean, in a way, they're technically co-writing it, and that's why they're co-creating it, right? Is because they're giving ideas where I need that help sometimes, right? And and it just gets you out of the loop, right? And it's been brilliant. Like, I've been working on this pitch for a bit now, and I'm just talking to an illustrator right now about it, and him and I were just talking back and forth, and I thought it was a great pitch, but he just added a little bit more to it. And I'm like, oh, dude, like, that is so much better than I had, right? And it really helps because you get another person's perspective, you get another person's experience on board, and this and that. So it's been great. But yeah, like, the thing is, just keep doing the work, and artists will find you, and that's what, like, it was funny, like, after I was announced for that Top Cow thing, like, two things happened. One, I got instantly followed by 5 editors, and these are editors from diamond-level publishers, right? And and I've been following these editors this whole time, right? And then all of a sudden, boom, and, like, the next day, like, they're following me, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's how it works, you know? Like, okay, that's pretty cool, right? And it's nice to know that, you know, they are watching you, and that's the biggest thing, is they will find you. If you're doing the work, they will find you. They know what you're doing. And I mean, it's like the Big Brother type of thing. It's kind of creepy, but they will find you. But then the other thing was also a bunch of illustrators saying, hey, let's work together, which is funny because, I mean, some of those illustrators were ones I've asked a long time ago. And they're like, I won't do it for free, you know, $50 a page and blah, 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 blah. And then 3 years later, I'm going to have 8 books coming out this year by a variety of different publishers, and they still don't have any. And it's like, dude, like, if you just take like that, even that 1 year, just take 1 year of your time and put out a 24-page comic book, or, you know, like a standalone story, whatever that, that I can't even stress how important that is. Like, it's just so important. Just take 1 year and say, I'm going to focus on doing one comic book to get it out. And make sure it's a complete story, right? Don't just do part one of four and don't ever stop. Don't ever finish it, because that doesn't look good either, right? Do a complete story and then, or, you know, a graphic novel like Snarl. Mm-hmm. We did Snarl because we want to pitch something else. Like me and the artist, Nathan Kelly, want to pitch another comic book to Image and other publishers at New York Comic Con this year. And that's why we did Snarl. So I can go down to Image or Boom or Oni and Dark Horse and say, hey, here's a free comic book. Here's Snarl. This is what I've done. The illustrator's in there. The colors is in there. The letter's in there. And by the way, this is what we want to pitch to you. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to give them two complete comic books, right? And I'll also probably give them the trade of Starburn as well, so they can see that I've done more stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's exactly what they want to see, and they want to get done and go out and do it. But yeah, like for me, I just love the medium. And it just happens that when I started writing comic books, it came extremely easy for me. I'm basically just writing. It sounds like I'm insane, but what I'm doing is I'm basically watching the visual movie of the comic book in my head. Mm-hmm. And I'm just writing down what's happening. I'm seeing a movie that nobody's ever seen before, and I'm writing it down so that I can somehow describe it to my illustrator. Mm-hmm. And that's the big tricky thing, is that sometimes the best part of my day is when I get a page back from my illustrator that looks better than I wrote down and I had it in my head.
Oh, cool.
But on the other hand, the worst part of my day is when I get a page back and it looks nothing like I envisioned in my head, right? Mm. And that happened really, really early on, where I just didn't know what the panel and the page should look like, right? And and also we weren't on the same page, because once you start collaborating, you're on the same page, right? So you know exactly what each character is going to do, you know, their mindset, their mentality, and the environment, all that. So,
mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, I just wanted to interject two quick things. You talked about Stories That End. I don't know if you guys, either of you have read it. Sweet Tooth by Jeff Lemire.
Love it.
I've heard of it. I've never read it.
If you ever get a chance to read it, the last issue is so touching. It just, you know, I still choke up when I think about it. It was just a well-done book.
That's what they all should be, though. Like, I mean, I still think, like, I love Sweet Tooth. And another one, great one, Wayne, is Why the Last Man. That book ended, that's a great series, and that book ended, like, it almost brought tears to my eyes, I'm telling you. But, and it's probably the father in me, I don't know what it is. It seems once you have a kid, you start getting emotional. But the greatest ending that I've ever read of any series, movie, novel, comic book was Narnia. Like, Narnia just ended the way it was just... Yeah, like when you put the book down, you're like, yeah, I've gotten my closure. I'm done. I'm done. Like every character, everything is completed. And yes, I loved Sweet Tooth. I love anything Jeff Lemire does, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. More of his, obviously, his creator-owned stuff. And yeah, Mind Management, that's another one that's just ending. And I'm just like, oh, God, how's this going to end, right, with by Matt Kintz? Because I just love that. But that's what you want, right? Even Preacher ended okay. Like, you know, like Sandman... Yeah, I don't think it ended the way I liked it. I really enjoyed it more to the end. Like, The Kindly Ones was by far my favorite series for that. But all those great Vertigo series, are the if they're able to go the full process without getting canceled, then yeah, they're great pieces of literature. They really are. And that's what kills me, is when these series get canceled before they have a chance to be fully written.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, I thought what I would do to wrap things up is to ask you guys where you would like to be in the future. Like, you guys, you had a goal of creating comic books, and I think you guys both succeeded in making good comic books, enjoyable ones, I think I highly recommend to everybody. Now the question is, what's the next thing you guys want to accomplish as an indie comics creator? And Bob, why don't we start with you? Any goals that you'd like to meet in the next couple of years?
I mean, right now, I mean, obviously, I would love to see Salvagers become a household name, but I have script concepts that I'm working on. I want to be able to say that at the end of the day, that I've written several very high quality scripts, comic book scripts, and produced them from beginning to end. But I also, right now, like, I want to learn how to write a screenplay. I want to see something that I wrote on the big screen, and I want it to be high quality. I would love to be the guy, like somebody that wrote the screenplay for something that's not one of these big blockbuster Avenger movies, but something like, I mean, if you look at like Blade Runner, I would love to be this 80-year-old man that wrote a screenplay for something that every generation just kind of was like, yeah, that was a good movie. You know, like, it didn't make $500 million opening weekend, but there's like this one guy that's like, you know, I got that on DVD. And people be like, oh, you got that on DVD? Like, you know, just to have like that. Like, I would love to create something that just had that cult aspect of it. And again, I mean, I agree like what Kelly says. Like, I think as creators, like you, the first thing you create is your step into the door. And then that kind of gives you the ability to do what you want to do. And I have a few ideas that I'm really excited to get into. And I think that having a 9-to-5 job, it kind of focuses me on salvagers. But I'm hoping that soon I'll be more able to work on many things during the day. And that would be great. I already have my coffee shop that I've picked out, that I can work out of, that has a great Wi-Fi, and that's it, you know. But right now, that's what I'm looking forward to the future. But right now, I feel like I'm totally blessed to be doing something that I originally called it a hobby, and I still call it a hobby because it's not something that's paying the bills. It's just starting to get close to maybe 50% funding itself. But I'm having a great time doing it, and I think at the end of the day, I see that I have something of substance. And something that I can look at, and I can look at these characters, and I think not only me, but I feel like that there's a fan base out there that also looks at these characters, and they feel connected to them, and that is a wild thing for me to process, is that there are people out there that that feel connected with characters that I wrote, and it makes me feel like I'm doing the right thing.
Cool, very cool. How about you, Kelly?
Yeah, I honestly, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing. I just want to keep creating creator-owned stuff and keep climbing the ladder so that, and then hopefully, if I'm fortunate, that bring as many talented artists and inkers and colorists and deserving people along with me. And that's what I'm doing, is just keep going at it. And that's my game plan. Like I said earlier, is I just set out a game plan for myself. And at the end of the day, my game plan isn't to work for Marvel and DC. It's to do my own creator stuff and keep going at it. And if it becomes something else, and I would love that. I would love it to be a movie. I'd love this and that to be this and that. But if it isn't, I'm content. Just keep doing what I'm doing. And yeah, it'd be great to eventually headline in Comic Cons or something like that. But in the meantime, I'm happy just doing what I'm doing. I'm happy meeting people. I'm happy working with my teams and getting this stuff out and just keeping at it. And then that's the biggest thing for me, is just keep to my game plan, know what I'm doing, and go from there.
Okay, well, you guys are both doing great jobs, in my opinion, and so I'm sure you guys will both have a lot of success in the future. And I learned a lot tonight listening to you guys and talking with you, so I'm sure my listeners will as well. So, you know, I appreciate you guys being able to talk about it. We'll have to do this again sometime.
I'd appreciate that. I love it.
Okay, well,
yeah, I'd love to come back on.
Okay, great. Well, Kelly, yeah, I want to talk with you again in the future about some of your other books as well. So we'll do that again in the future. And Bob, of course, you always have an open invitation to come on the podcast whenever you'd like.
I appreciate that, Wayne.
So we will talk to you guys again soon. But until the next time, you guys have a lot of success.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.